We're holding on page Nun Zayin in Nedarim Os Yud Gimel. We learned about how Hashem tells Avraham, Yesamim, be perfect before me. And Avraham was worried that that means that maybe he's lacking something. And Hashem told him, no, it's just that you haven't had a bris milah yet. Now I'm giving you the mitzvah of bris milah. And then we learned also that Avraham had said to Hashem, "My mazal, based on my mazal, I'm not fated to have, I'm fated to have only one child, and I already have Yishmael." And Hashem tells him, "No, ain mazal Yisrael." So now, continuing on that topic about the importance of a person being tumim with Hashem, and also, so it also relates back to that point about Hashem telling Avraham to be tumim. So Amar Rabbi Yitzchok, kol ha-masmim es atzma, a person who makes himself complete, a person who makes himself tamim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu mitamim imo, then Hashem will act with him in a tamim or stick away. So one point of that in masmim atzma means, in other words, that he's not constantly looking to try and figure out the future. Rashi, in fact, mentions on the pasuk tamim tia im Hashem alekecha, means don't always be looking and trying to forecast the future and everything. Just to accept that the Eibishter runs the world and he knows what's best for you. So when a person acts with that kind of mentality, then Hashem acts in the same way reciprocally towards him. So again, it connects with this point before that Avraham was tamim im Hashem alekecha. So Maharsha also connects it with the immediately previous part about that here Avraham had said to Hashem that it seems that my mazel doesn't allow me to have another child, and Hashem tells him ein mazel Yisrael. So this relates to that also. He's not listening anymore. He knows not to listen to all the stargazing and all of that. So Hashem, in fact, acted with him in a tamimistic way and changed his mazel. Ion Yaakov points out another point as well. Another way of understanding it is, we can say before we said that ain mazel Yisrael. Now we might say that actually there is, Rabbi Yitzchok would say there is mazel for Yisrael, but Hashem will take him from under that mazel if he taka deserves it. The Gemara has a whole discussion in Masechta Shabbos whether yesh mazel Yisrael or ain mazel Yisrael. So the previous Gemara would have said ain mazel Yisrael. This one is saying yes, there is mazel for Yisrael, but it can be, or it could, the Eibishter can transform it when a person deserves it. So that would be another connection between this and the previous part. Rav Oshia says, also in this vein, a person who makes himself tamim, who works to make himself as perfect as possible in his midas, and tamim tia mashem alekecha, that he's not looking to constantly worry about what's going to be in the future, but he trusts that the Eibishter is going to arrange it for him in the best possible way, then the time will stand by him, meaning, in other words, that Hashem will arrange that things will happen to him at the proper time. Here also it relates to this whole matter of mazel, because the Gemara, that same Gemara in Shabbos, discusses the question, there's mazolus of the days of the week, and then there's mazolus of the individual hours of the day. As we know, this is why the whole thing not making Kiddush between 6 and 7 on Friday is based on the mazolus of the hours. So here we're saying that if a person is masmi masatzmoy, then shah imedisloy, the Eibishter arranges that his mazel shah will be for good, and if necessary, change that mazel. The months have mazalos, right? But then, yeah, there was that too. But in the Gemara and Shabbos over there, it talks about a person is born on a particular day of the week, then he's influenced by a certain mazel, and a person is born in a certain hour of the day, he's influenced by a certain mazel. But then the Gemara discusses over there, does that apply across the board to Jews? Do we say en mazel Yisrael, like we learned yesterday, or do we say yesh mazel Yisrael, or do we say en mazel Yisrael? And as we talked about yesterday in Chassidus, it talks about, in a way, kind of a reconciliation of it, ayin mazel Yisrael, our mazel is not based on the mazolis, like it is for everybody else, but rather it comes from a level of ayin, from a level of course far beyond the mazalis. Anyway, so now we're saying again that a person is masmim esatzmai shah imedisloi, the hour stands by him. In other words, Hashem makes things happen for him at the proper time. And if necessary, Maharsha says, that means also Hashem will change his mazel for good. The same way as we just said before, that Hashem did with Avraham, where b'derech hateva, he wouldn't have been able to have more children, and Hashem arranged that he did. Shenema, as you find, the Hishalach Lafane Veyesamim, Hashem tells Avraham, walk before me and be Tomim, Ochiv, and a couple of psukim later, Hashem tells him, Vayisal Av Hamon Goyim, you will become a father of a multitude of nations. So, in other words, the connection is because he made himself Tomim, because he trusted that whatever Hashem is going to do for him is right, then and he wasn't looking, and he wasn't looking anymore at the stargazing and all that about what his future was going to be. Therefore, the Eibishter reciprocated and brought him higher than the mazel, and made it that he would be able to have children, even though according to his natural mazel, he wouldn't have. So earlier, also before the Bris Vein HaBesodim, you also have the expression that Vehem in Ba'Hashem, that Avraham trusted in Hashem, Vayachshev Eloi Tzedakah, and Hashem considered for him Tzedakah, that they are also that Hashem promises him you're going to have children, and Avraham didn't keep on asking how do I know it's going to come true. He had total emunah in the Eibishter, so that all relates to this as well. And the Gemara continues in this vein, Omer of Levi, or different Girsa Rebbe, Kol HaMenachesh, on the flip side of it, anybody who is Menachesh, anybody who's constantly looking for omens and signs and sgulis and whatever of what's going to happen, Loi Nachash, then Nachash does in fact have an effect on him. And therefore, in other words, now if one time he gets careless and doesn't follow that thing, then he can end up getting in trouble and getting harmed. The Ran refers in this connection, for example, there's a whole sugya in Masechta Psachim about the issue of zugos, where the Gemara discusses whether you're not supposed to eat and drink in even numbers, and it has a whole long sugya over there extending over a couple of blot about it. And then in the end, after going through a lot of details about it, the Gemara points out, you know what the bottom line is: kol dekofid man dekofid kapdinan. If a person is generally careful about this, and then one time he slips up, then he can be harmed by shadim or kishur, for whatever the Gemara says over there that he's susceptible to. Whereas if to begin with he pays the whole matter no attention, then they won't bother him either. Which is why nowadays next to nobody is nizer, and that's brought that the Minchas Elazar was careful with it, but almost nobody else is. So this is an example of kol menachesh loy nachash. So if a person is into that kind of nichush, that he's always looking to see to make sure that he has everything arranged according to the simonim and according to the segulas and all and so on and so forth, then that means that those things will have an effect on him. But if he doesn't, then no. Shenema, as we find, Kiloy Nachash B'Yakov, as we find, Bilam says in one of his brachas to the Jewish people, he says there's no Nachash in Yaakov. So now the Gemara asks, the problem with that is, if we understood, if the pasuk was written loy with a vav, then yeah, it would be ki loy nachash b'Yaakov. There is for them nachash in Yaakov, and then we would learn this concept. Why do they have nachash? Because they themselves are looking for nachash. But here it says it with a lamed aleph. So it means the opposite. There is no nachash in Yaakov. So how does that teach us Reb Levi or Rebbe's point? So the Gemara says, fine, you're right, Elam Shum Midah Keneged Midah. It's not really based on the Pasuk, it's rather more just because we know that in general, the Eibishter judges a person Midah Keneged Midah, so therefore, so it's not, we're not, so we're not necessarily, the Mefarish explains over here, it's printed under Rashi's name, explains, it doesn't mean that in the end we're learning it from the Pasuk, it just means the Gemara is saying, you're right, how do we know? Rabbi Levi's point is because the Eibishter does Midah Keneged Midah. Now, Marsho, though, explains differently. That first of all, and we always know that Eibishter does Midah Keneged Midah. There's no special thing about this. And the fact is that we did, after all, we brought a pasuk. It's very strange for the Gemara to just say Ella, like, okay, we're going to ignore the pasuk. The fact is, what are we doing with the pasuk? So Maharsha explains what it means is the very fact that the Eibishter does Midah Keneged Midah with this kind of thing is derived from this pasuk, namely, what happened? Bilam has been trying several times to curse the Jewish people. Now he realizes, it finally dawns on him, Kiloy Nachash B'Yakov. You know what? It's not going to be effective to do Nachash against the Jewish people. And therefore, up until now, he himself was using Nichush. Now, after this, the Pasuk says, V'loy holach kapam b'fam v'kras nechoshim. He no longer tried to use Nichush. He no longer tried to use superstitious and magical methods to try and curse the Jewish people. Why? Because he realized now, Kila Nachash B'Yakov, the Jewish people don't pay any attention to such things, and therefore the Eibishter is not going to allow my Nichush to have any effect on them. And therefore, when he tried for the third time, then he gave up on his idea of using Nichush. So therefore, we can, in fact, learn from the Pasuk, precisely because it says with Lamed Aleph, meaning Loi, there is no Nachash in Yaakov, and therefore he realized his Nachash is not going to help either. Another point, also, Ion Yaakov makes a point that after all, the name Yaakov itself is suggests dishonesty. After all, we have Esav complaining after Yaakov got the brachas by Yaakveni zepamayim. He outsmarted me 2 times. So you would think that when the Jewish people are described under the name Yaakov, they're the type who are likely to use nachash and to use superstitious and things like that to try and figure out to try and figure out the future. But no, but Bilam is stressing, no, ki lo nachash b'Yaakov. As a matter of fact, there is no nachash even at the level of the Jewish people when they're called Yaakov. Nevertheless, there's not. And therefore, Bilam thinks to himself, my nichush is not going to do any good against them. So the Gemara continues in this vein, Toni Ava Breder Abzera. Kol Adam she'eina menachash, anybody who is not menachash, who again doesn't try to use various superstitious methods and sgulas and all that to try and foretell or to try and influence the future, but rather he accepts that whatever the Ebeshter is going to do for him is how it's supposed to be. Machnisin oisil mechitza shafil malachi asharis eni michelun likonislo. He is brought in. His neshama will go in the Olam HaEmes into an area where even the Malachi HaShoris are not going to be able to come in there, meaning a level of very high closeness to Hashem. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Kila Nachash B'Yaakov. Remember this pasuk that starts that there's no Nachash, there's none of the superstitious stuff in Yaakov, and the pasuk continues, Ka'es, Ka'es, at a time like this, Ya'omer LeYaakov LeYisrael, there will be said to Yaakov and to Yisrael, Ma Po'al Kael, what is Hashem doing? Which means the Malachi HaShoris themselves are going to have to be asking the Jewish people, what is Hashem doing? Because they're not. There's an inner area over there where only the neshamas of such people are able to go, and even the malachim are not able to go there. So they're like stuck outside, and they have to ask the neshamas who are on the inside, so what's going on? What is the Eibishter doing? Now, the Ran explains, this is also part of Midah Keneged Midah. He's not using nachash. He's not trying to foretell the future. He trusts that Hashem will do whatever is right. Therefore, so Hashem reveals to him secrets that even the Malachi HaShoris are not able to achieve. So that's another point as well, that not only, we're saying several things about this whole idea of nichush. Now, first of all, I mean, b'chlal, the Torah says that nichush is osur. So we're not even necessarily talking about the kind of nichush that's outright osur, like, for example, saying a black cat crossed my path and therefore I'm going to have an unlucky day. That's that kind of thing is b'chlal osur. We're talking about more the kind of things that are mutter, like the kind of things that at least if you know, that at least you have things like red strings and you have things like various sgulas and things like that. So we're saying that when a person does without those and just trusts in the Eibishter to do what's right for him, then we're saying that he has these that the Eibishter treats him in a way where he's not affected by such nichush, and that he gets to be so close to the Eibishter, even closer than the Malachi HaShoris. Ion Yaakov makes another point as well. The fact that he's not using Nechoshim and things like that implies that he wants to be under the direct control of Hashem rather than be subject to what Malachim and various other forces bring into the world. And therefore, he gets to be as close as possible. And therefore, he gets to be as close as possible to the Eibishter. In fact, he says this is the pasuk meaning Tamim Tia Im Hashem Alekecha can also be understood in that vein. When Tamim Tia, when you will be Tamim, meaning the opposite of Nachash, like this, then you will be Im Hashem Alekecha. You will be with Hashem lifnim mimchitzasim, as we're saying over here, even closer than Malachim. Okay, getting back to Avraham Avinu now, let's talk about some more details involving Avraham. We talked about him in connection with Bris Milah, so now let's talk about some more details with him, with Bris Ben Absorim and everything with that. I forgot, by the way, yesterday when we were talking about Mila and Torah, I forgot to mention an interesting point. By bris we say two brachas. You have the bracha, you have the bracha ala Mila, and then you have the bracha lachnis b'bris shel Avraham Avinu. So why the second bracha? The first one is the Birkas HaMitzvahs, that's standard. But what's the point behind the second bracha? The Levush says an interesting idea. B'chlal, we know the Alam Mila, the Moyel makes the bracha Alam Mila, and then the father makes the bracha Lachnis B'Vrisei. The Levush says a vort on it because it's not so much a bracha on the Mila itself, it's that now that the boy has a Mila, now that's a prerequisite as we tell the father. The father is saying, now we've done the part that makes it possible that later on we'll be able to be machnis, now done machnis, shalom Avraham Avinu, and that will be a prerequisite for him to be able to learn Torah and do mitzvahs later on in life. And in fact, there's an interesting thing in that connection. There was one time, now in Shulchan Aruch it says, if the father is not around by the bris for one reason or another, then the moyel says that bracha, lachnisei. So there was a case actually involved where that was brought to Rabbi Akiva Eiger, where the father wasn't available for the bris, but the grandfather was there. And then the question was, should the grandfather say the bracha or should the moel? So Rabbi Akiva Eiger said, actually, yes, in that case, the grandfather should say it. Because the point is, again, the father is saying the bracha usually because he's the one who's going to be eventually teaching teaching the child Torah. Well, the Gemara tells us in Kiddushin that the grandfather also has a mitzvah to teach his grandson Torah. So therefore, Rabbi Akiva Eiger says, based on that Lavush, then it should be the grandfather in that case who would make the bracha. Getting back to the Gemara, so Ois Tesvav now. Omer Rabba Bohu, Omer Rabba Lazar. Mipnei ma nenash Avram Avinu. Why was Avram Avinu punished that v'nishtabdu bon of the Mitzrayim masayim v'eser shonim, that his children, that his descendants were enslaved for 210 years in Mitzrayim? Now, the Rosh asks the question, what do you mean? What do you mean? What did he do wrong? We know what he did wrong. He said, Bamo Eida ki irashena. When the Ebishter tells him in Parshas Lech Lecha, you and you're gonna have children and they're gonna have descendants and they're gonna and ani Hashem asher tisichem u'kastim and I'm gonna give you this land, then Avraham says, Bamo Eida ki irashena. Now, on one level, Bamo Eida can mean that Avram is asking, with what zchus are the Jewish people going to inherit Eretz Yisrael? And the Eibush answers him with the Bris Ben Habsorim, it represents in the zchus of the Korbanos. Rashi brings it on the pasuk. But another shade of meaning in Bamo Eda, or at least it sounds like, either it means this, or at least it sounds like it means this, that he's questioning and saying, how will I know that this promise is going to come true? So the Rosh says, well, that's reason enough for the Shibud in Mitzrayim. What is the Gemara even asking? So he says, fine, but the question is, let's go back a step. What is it that Avraham did something that wasn't quite right that caused that he should end up saying this wrong statement, Bamo Eda ki irashena, with the result that they went into Mitzrayim? So in other words, the Gemara is seeking the reason behind what got him to say Bamo Eda, what got him to say such a thing in the first place. Now, there's a footnote over here from Reb Shmuel Kedenover, who was a famous early Achron. He was a Rav in several important cities in Europe. He was the author of a major Pirush on Seder Kodshim called Birkas HaZevach and other Sfarim. Anyway, he asked the question that we find elsewhere. So what is it? We're saying that, so the Gemara is going to answer because of something that happened during the war with Sdoim. Now the question is, Tosfos explains elsewhere in Shas in Brachas that the Bris Ben Absorim, when Avraham says Bamo Eda, and Hashem replies by telling him the Bris Ben Absorim, that happened when Avraham was 70 years old. The war with the kings, Tosfos calculates over there, happened when Avraham was 73. So that being the case, how can the Gemara be saying, if the Rosh rather is explaining that because he did something wrong in the war with Sdoim, therefore that led him to say Bamo Eda, and in turn that led to Golos Mitzrayim, well, how does that work out chronologically if the Bris Ben Absodim was before that, was 3 years before that war ever happened? So we'll go through a little bit of the Gemara, and then we'll talk about some of the answers that various Achronim give to find for that question. In any case, so again, the question is, what did he do wrong that led him to say Bamo Eda, which in turn led to the Golos Mitzrayim? Marshall, though, points out you don't really have to say that. The fact is, again, Bamo Eda does have another meaning as well. It can also mean, like we just said, and Rashi brings on the pasuk from a medrash from Bereishis Rabbah, that it means that what zchus will the Jewish people have to take over Eretz Yisrael? In that case, then fine, there's nothing wrong with that. And in that case, then the Gemara has to seek a different reason what went wrong over there. So the answer is Mipnei She'osa an Garya b'Tamid Chachamim. So the reason is because he used Tamid Chachamim for forced labor. Angaria is a Greek or Latin word that means forced labor. So Shenema, we have by the war with the four kings, to save Loit and then the rest of the people of Sdoim over there. Vayorek es chanich of Yelidevese. Vayorek, which the Gemara will explain soon what the word Vayorek means, but basically the Poshet Pshat means that he mustered them together, he gathered them together. Es chanich of his the ones whom he had educated. Yelidevese, the ones who were born in his household. So these are his Talmidim, who he had taught about the Eibishter, and he had taught that he was teaching them Torah. Shmona also Shlosh Meis, 318 of them. Vayudef Adon, and he chased the four kings all the way to Don. So he shouldn't have done that. In other words, he should have. These people are learning Torah, and he shouldn't have taken them away from that to do this. As much as this is a matter of pikuach nefesh, nevertheless, he could have. For example, there were others that weren't learning Torah. He could have had them. Maharsha points out really what you have is the because first, Maharsha, well, first of all, the Ran points out the fact that it calls them chanichav implies that he was mechanich them to Torah. Thus, we see they were Talmid Chachamim. Maharsha makes another point as well. The fact that the Pasuk calls them Yelidei Beisai, the ones who were born in his household, means that he taught them Torah because, as we know, the Gemara says in a few places that when a person teaches someone Torah, it's as if he fathered him. So either way, the point is these were Talmid Chachamim, and Avraham should not have taken them away from their learning Torah, even for this important purpose of fighting the kings and saving light. So that's one reason. So again, according to the Ran, the vote is, that according to the Rosh, rather, according to the Rosh, the vote is because of that, that in turn led him to say Bamo'eda, which in turn led to the Golus Mitzrayim, to the slavery of 210 years in Mitzrayim. According to Maharsha, we don't need the middle step of Bamo'eda because he did this, therefore there was a Shibud in Mitzrayim. Now, so one of the so again, you have the Maharshak's question about the Seder of events. So one answer is. So first of all, Iyun Yaakov points out that there are in fact different opinions about the order of events, and there is in fact an opinion in Medrash Rabbah that Bris Ben Absorim was several years later, and in that case, there's for sure no problem. But another point also is that another point some of the Mefarshim make is actually Eitz Yosef mentions a point, brings from Shavuos Yaakov, the fact that we see that he did this by the war with Sodom shows that he it means that Avraham saw nothing wrong with it, and therefore we can assume, even though it's not recorded, that he did such things at other times as well, take the Talmid Chacham away from their learning Torah in order to do some other important job. So therefore, we could well say there was such a thing sometime before he was 70 by the Bris Ben Absurdim, and therefore now this resulted that now he said Bamo Eda and everything went wrong from there. Of course, there's a big question anyway. I mean, for just saying for two words, Bamo Eda, therefore there's a whole Golus Mitzrayim from that. And by the way, the what the Ran is saying over here, that's because he said Bamo Eda, and taking that in the sense that Bamo Eda is a negative thing to say, we have that actually in one of the piyutim that we say in davening on Rosh Hashanah as well. We have the piyut Oymetzadiri Kol Chayfetz that we say in Musaf the first day. You have a line of it. The whole piyut is built on this idea that even the tiny little mistakes that tzaddikim made throughout the generations have tremendous consequences, and you have one over there that Val Omre Bamo'eda Avraham Avinu, because he said Bamo'eda Nidin Bekav Yodaya Teda, therefore he was judged strictly, and he was told Yodaya Teda, you're going to well know that your descendants are going to be enslaved in Eretz Mitzrayim. This is the famous idea in that the ovos are like the seed that the whole tree grows from, and therefore the seed has to be absolutely perfect. And if there's any flaw in it, then it's going to come out in the tree and in the fruit afterwards, and therefore that has to be worked out. And that would explain, in other words, why such a tiny little thing had such devastating consequences. Some of the Mefarshim also learned, by the way, that the Gemara's question is not so much why there was the Shibud in Mitzrayim, but why Avraham had to be informed of it. Why does he have to be told in advance and have to have the tsar that this is going to have to happen to his descendants is because of this. So that's one answer.
Regarding that he took the Talmidei Chachamim to the fight, isn't that like an halacha by the Rambam that Mechamas Mitzvah, you go out, whoever is
Yes,
there?
but that's true, but the Chosin Mechedre V'Kala Mechuposa, but not necessarily the Talmid Chachamim. We find, for example, in Bava Basra, for example, the Gemara mentions that when it comes to, for example, the defenses of the city, the Talmid Chachamim are not to be conscripted for such work because the Torah protects them. So in the same way over here, then we're talking about that, and Avraham had a large household. He had lots of other people. He didn't have to take Davka, these 318 who are learning Torah. Okay, so that's one answer. Rab Shmuel bar Nachmeni Omar, another answer. Rab Shmuel, the words Rebbe and bar Nachmeni are in parenthesis because the different the Girsa in the printed Gemara is it's Shmuel saying this. Anyway, Mipnei Shehifriz Amidosef of Shalach HaKadosh Baruch Hu, here's another reason why there was there the enslavement in Mitzrayim is because he said because he went beyond the midas of Hashem, meaning in other words he went too far in doubting Hashem. Hifriz is like prozis teish of Yerushalayim. It means like he went the Ran translates it Hifriz viter v'hifker, like he's overriding and he's making hefker his words in front of the Eibishter. Shenema, as it says, Bamo'eda ki Yirashena. And again, we're taking that in the sense that he's saying Bamo'eda, that he's as if like he's doubting that he's doubting whether it's actually going to happen. The Rif actually makes a point over here. He says, if he had said "Bamoeda im Iroshena," then that would have been bad enough. Then Avraham himself would have been held responsible for that. But now he went even worse. "Bamoeda ki Iroshena," which means I know that I'm going to inherit it, but what children do I know that I'm going to have children where they're going to eventually inherit it? So that's really Hifriz Amidosov, says Shmuel. That's really going above and beyond and doubting the Eibishter's promises, because he had just told him that he's going to have children. So therefore, because of that, then it ended up coming out and his children as well, and they ended up going to Mitzrayim.
Is the Eva says Hashem says that Moshe wasn't like the others.
Right, that's true. In Parshas Va'era, right, that Moshe wasn't like the others because they never doubted Hashem's promises. Right, I guess Shmuel wouldn't necessarily agree with that point, because according to him, at least the statement "Bamoeda" sounds like a little bit of a doubt. Yeah. Okay, that's a good point. Yeah. All right. So that's the second reason. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Rabbi Yochanan gives a third reason. Because Avraham prevented people from coming under the wings of the Shechina. In other words, there was a time when he had an opportunity to bring people into his household and teach them about the Eibishter, and he gave up that opportunity. After the war with Sodom, the king of Sodom tells him, after the war with the four kings, when he saved Sodom and the whole group over there in Lot, the king of Sodom tells him, "Ten li anefesh, give me back the souls," meaning the people, "v'arachush kach loch, and you can keep the wealth for yourself." And Avraham says, "I'm not keeping any of the wealth." Hadi moisi yadi. Now, though, the point is that so Avraham returned all of the property, but he also returned all the captives. He shouldn't have done that. He should have said, "Them I want to keep, because I want to teach them about the Eibishter." So instead, he gave up this opportunity, and he would have been legally able to, because he had saved them. So in effect, they were hefker. So he had the chance to do that, and we know until now he was doing that. Avraham Megayrus Anoshim, Sodom Megayrus Anoshim. So here he missed this opportunity. In fact, there's an explanation what does that have to do with the Jewish people going down to Mitzrayim? Well, we see that Mitzrayim, in Golus Mitzrayim, so when they came out, the Taka came out with an Eid of Rav. So in other words, that sort of made up for that missed opportunity from hundreds of years earlier of Avraham Avinu, that now Taka, they brought out many people with them, many, many Mitzrayim who were Taka motivated to join the Jewish people because of what they saw with the Makkos and all that. More on the topic of that war with the four kings and the 318 people that he drafted. This pasuk vayorek es chanechav. What does that word vayorek mean? Rav u Shmuel. So Rav and Shmuel disagree what the word vayorek means. Chad omer sheherikon b'Torah. One says that herikon with Torah. Now that itself has two different meanings. The Ran gives two explanations. One is that herikon means that he encouraged them. He encouraged them with the Torah that he had taught them, and in the schus of that, they were able to win the war. So even though the Gemara had said before he shouldn't have drafted them in the first place, but the fact is they were strengthened and they were enabled to win the war because of the schus of the Torah that they learned. And the other explanation, the Ran says, is the other way around. Herikon is Moloshin Vaborek. He emptied them of their Torah by using them for this forced labor, by drafting them for the army, and therefore, he emptied them out of the Torah that they had been learning. So that's one opinion. The other one says that he encouraged them with gold. Herikon is related to the word Yirakrak, which is a word meaning bright gold. Yirakrak choretz, the pasuk in Kapitel Samaches of Tilim. So therefore, it means herikon meloshin yirakrak. He offered them a lot of gold to go to war. Now, why would he do that? Marsha brings from the Medrash. The reason is because this way they'll have a lot of treasure with them already. That way, they'll be more focused on atzolas nefashis and not focused on taking the spoils for themselves. Like this, if they weren't compensated in advance, they might think to themselves, "Well, you know what? If we're going to war, we might as well take as much of the spoils as we want for ourselves." And the whole point was, Avraham says afterwards to the king of Sodom, "V'loy tayman ni ha'shart yes Avraham." So therefore, we had to give them money in advance to prevent them from thinking that way. Marsha also brings from the Medrash, says that another meaning, Hurikon, also means he emptied out anybody who's afraid to go, because he announced to them the Psukim in Parshas Shoftim that anybody who's afraid to go, Mia Yishar Hayore Barach Alevav, should leave the army. Okay, so those are various meanings of the word Vayore. So next, when it says Shmona also Shloish Meis, it says there were 318 of them. So Omar Rab Ami Ba'aba Ve'Eliezer Keneged Kulam. Eliezer was equal in tower and in power and in schusim to all of them. The Ikadami Zehu Eliezer. Another opinion is that the 318 actually refers exclusively to Eliezer. Eliezer b'choshbona hachehavi, because the gematria of Eliezer is 318. So therefore, in other words, it means that Avraham took along only himself and Eliezer, and not 318 people, because he had Eliezer, who's equal because of the gematria of his name is equal to 318. So Marsha points out, the Pasuk does say at the end of there, you had Onur, Eshkol, and Mamre were involved, but like Rashi says on the Pesukim over there, they were Yoshua Akelim, they stayed behind to guard the equipment while Avraham and Eliezer were saying over here went to war. So on the face of it, it seems to be it's a machloikus, whether in fact there were all 318 of them or whether there was Reb Eliezer. A very interesting thing I saw, there was a Talmud Chacham lived in London in the last few decades. He was nifter about 25 years ago, named Reb Alter Shloima Halpern. He wrote a couple of sfarim, a couple of serious sifrei limud, but aside from that, he also wrote a book of stories for children. I'm sure everybody here has seen it at one time or another, and other tales of faith, it's called. And he pictures it over there that Avraham is calling on his people to join and fight this Milchemes Mitzvah, and everybody's afraid to come forward. And then Eliezer steps forward, and that breaks the ice, and then others step forward as well. So in that sense, then, it can be both, that Eliezer is credited, like the whole 318, because he's the first one to step forward. So it's an interesting chat. Here's another thing that we should know about Avraham. Ben Gimel Shonim Hikar Avraham as Boroi. Avraham first recognized Hashem when he was 3 years old. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Ekev Asher Shama Avraham B'Koili. Hashem says to Yitzchak, Ekev, as a result of that Avraham listened to my voice, and as a reward for that, and therefore I'm going to give you brachas. Now, the Shnoisav Shal Avraham Chutz Mishloisha Ekev B'Chushbonim Mei Avashim V'Tartin. The gematria of the word Ekev is 172. Avraham lived to 175. So therefore we see that so 3 years old, he first recognized the Eibishter, and therefore for Ekev years, for 172 years, He was serving the Eibishter. There's a medrash, by the way, where Avraham feels bad about it, that it comes out. Now, the Rambam describes in Hilchos Avodah Zarah at the beginning, the Rambam gives the whole historical overview of how Avodah Zarah came about in the first place, and how Avraham Avinu first counteracted it, and so on and so forth. And the Rambam makes a point over there that up until that point, Avraham was serving Avodah Zarah together with everybody else there. So the Medrash mentions that Avraham felt very bad about it, and the Eibishter tells him that, no, don't you worry, it's like all of that has been cleaned up, and then his truva is like a truva me'ava, that Zdonis Nasa le'kezachis, and therefore it can be considered in retrospect that all of his years were serving the Eibishter even before that. By the way, different Midrashim. The Rambam, by the way, mentions over there that Avraham was 40 when Hikaris Boda. And there are various Midrashim that give various other ages. The standard explanation is that it wasn't a one-time thing. Avraham kept on discovering more and more about the Eibishter. At 3 years old, as we all learn as kids, then he first realized that the sun, the moon, everything always sets and goes away, and there has to be one Eibishter that runs it all. And then as he got older, and as he got to be 40, and then 48, and then another Midrash says 50, then he was discovering more and more about the Eibishter. And then at 52, the Gemara tells us in Avodah Zarah, is when he and Sarah actually started working on being Megayer people, which is why that age, he was born in the year 1948. When he was 52, comes to the year 2000, since Ma'aseh Bereishis, that begins Shnei Alafim Torah. At that point begins the 2,000 years of Torah, begins with Avraham and Sarah going on Mivtzoyim and making Gerim. And Nefesh Asher Asa B'Choron. What? So Lech Lecha actually picks up when Avraham is 75. The beginning of Lech Lecha is Avraham is 75 years old, is in the year 2023. And then we said before, it's possible that some of the events in Parshas Lech Lecha may be out of order. The Bris Ben Absarim, according to many opinions, was when Avraham was 70, which is 5 years earlier. And then the war with the four kings, Tosfos says, was when Avraham was 73. So the events may be out of order, some of them, but in any case, that's where Lech Lecha begins. Yeah, there's a sikha, actually, where the Rebbe talks about, you know, it's interesting, you don't have, like this, Avraham was accomplishing tremendous things in Choron all those years, and you don't have anything about it in Torah Shabbat Peh at all. Parshas Lech Lecha begins out of the blue, Vayim Hashem Avraham Lech Lecha, as though, like, what happened to all his meisim before that, there's really no hint of them in Torah Shabbat Sav, and there's a sikha where the Rebbe explains, because that's meant to stress the point that ultimately the Eibishter's choice of Avraham and of the Jewish people people is not based on our ma'asim, it's rather based on an essential an atmiistic connection between the Eibishter and us. So therefore, the Torah makes it sound as though Avraham was just some random person and Hashem spoke to him to stress that point. Okay. Speaking of gematrios, now the Gemara brings another one. This is also from the same Amora, Rab Ami Bar. Well, it's all connected because Rab Ami Bar Abba is saying these things. We just said Rab Ami Bar Abba had said about the 318 in Eliezer, and he says about the 172 years of Avraham. So now here's another gematria related thing that he says. Rab Ami Bar Abba has Satan b'chushbona tlasmei b'shitin v'arba havu. The name has Satan is gematria 364. Now we usually think of the name as just Satan, but the fact is that in every place. Marshall points out, in every place in Tanakh where it speaks of him, it always has it with the hey. It always has it with the hey idea. Vayomer Hashem al Hasatan, you have an Eov, and in Zechariah, and in other places. So therefore, the hey can be treated as part of his name. So the Gematria is 364. Now here the Gemara doesn't stress what that, here the Gemara doesn't spell out what that means. The Gemara in Yuma explains that what that teaches us is there are 365 days in a year, in a solar year, that is. So that represents the idea that 364 days a year, the Satan has the ability to accuse the Jewish people. But on Yom Kippur, the one day, the 365th day, he has no ability to do that. It's represented by the fact that the name of the Gematria of his name is 364. There's a lot of interesting points in that. Yun Yaakov points out one problem with that is a Jewish year is usually 354 days. So 365 days is a solar year. And after all, in one solar year, there can be two Yom Kippurs. So how does that work out? Parshat Pshat, you would say, is the average is 365, because since we have leap years, the whole point is to make it equal with the solar year. So in the long run, you have approximately 365 days in a Jewish year on average over the long run. We find by the Ketores, for example, that they had 365 mana per year. But anyway, Ian Yaakov gives a different point that the first year after the Eibishter created a world, he brings from a Medrash that it was actually an Ibur year. That being the case, then that first year was actually 380 some days. So that first year there was a Yom Kippur, and every year after that, therefore, we can say that the Yom Kippur belongs to only one solar year and not to two. So it justifies the calculation over here. There's some place in explanation, I don't remember now where, that also points out what's the extra hay is. The fact is, okay, Marashah is saying we're treating the hay as though it was part of the name, because every place it always calls him Hasatan. But another point is the hay also represents the 5 days from Yom Kippur until Sukkot. The Medrash says that when it says about the first day of Sukkot, well, kachtem lachem b'yom harishon. How is it Yom HaRishon? It's the 15th of the month. And the Medrash says, Rishon L'chesh Ben Avonis. It's like the first day for a new count of Averis for the year. Like a person's Averis have been forgiven on Yom Kippur. And the 4 days between Yom Kippur and Sukkot, as we all know every year, we're running around hither and yon doing mitzvahs. So therefore, like the Satan doesn't have the ability to accuse us during that time either, because we're so busy with mitzvahs. So you have five more days aside from Yom Kippur itself, where also the Satan has no ability to accuse. So you have that. You have a lot of other interesting points in that. There's an interesting point that Rabbi Yonis and Eibeshitz makes in Eitz Yosef, refers over here to Yaris Dvash from Rabbi Yonis and Eibeshitz, who makes a nice point about this. He says, you know, we say the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah are considered like Yom Arichta. They're considered for many purposes in halacha like one long day. So in effect, really what it is in a certain sense, you could say the year consists of only 364 days. So therefore, that first year, the Eibishter took that long day and split it in two to create the 2 days that we have nowadays. But therefore, so you have like one day that wasn't put under the dominion of the Satan in the first place. And that's what we're saying, the one day a year, the 365th day, which is Yom Kippur. Here's another gematria that has to do with that. Here's another gematria related thing, also having to do with Avram. Ksiv Avram uchtiv hu Avraham. First he was called Avram without the hay, and then he was renamed Avraham with the hay. What's the significance of the hay? Originally, Hashem gave Avraham dominion over 243 of his limbs. In other words, a person has bechira chofshes, a person can choose, is he going to use his hands, his feet, his various other body parts for mitzvahs or the opposite? So at first, Avraham was given the ability, like any other person, to control 243 of his evorim. to be careful that they shouldn't be susceptible to Avelis. But you have five that are missing, because usually you have a person's eyes and ears are generally not under his control. A person can't help what he sees. He can, as soon as he sees something that he shouldn't be seeing, he can turn away, but meanwhile he's already seen it. The same thing, a person hears something that's also automatic, he can't really control it. And the Rosh HaGvia, the tip of the male Aver, is also something that's very hard for a person to control. So all of a sudden, after Avraham had a bris, Al Masayim Rabboim Shmona Evarim, then Hashem gave him full control over all 248. The Elohim, the missing five, were Shtei Enayim, or Shtei Oznayim, the two eyes, the two ears, Verosh HaGvia, and the tip of the Aver. Now he has full control that now, like, he can determine what he's going to see and what he's not going to see, and what he's going to hear and what he's not going to hear, and what he's going to have and not have a taiva towards. Marshall points out another way of looking at it is that another way. So the Gemara is mentioning these five evarim, but so there is the point that they're involuntary. But another way of looking at it, Marshall says, is that out of a person's five senses, hearing and seeing are more ruchniistic senses. The other ones, taste, smell, and touch, are more gashmius oriented. So hearing and seeing are more ruchnius oriented. So therefore, when we said before, we said that Hashem tells Avraham with the bris milah, veheyeh samim, you will be complete, meaning that you'll have the greatest milus of seichel and of midas. So now it means that also Hashem gave him control over these two more spiritually oriented senses, that now we can use them purely for ruchni. For ruchniistic purposes, to improve his seichel and midas and become tamim through that. Rashi on Chumash brings this drasha on that pasuk. Ishalach lafane ve'yesamim, that Hashem tells him now, as a result of the milah, you'll be renamed Avraham, and your gematria of your name will be 248, and you'll have a shlita, and you'll have dominion over these five as well. So it all represents that idea that the Eibishter is giving him an extra degree of shleimus. And we have in Tanya these days where it talks about that the Ovis were the Merkava, that they're completely bottled to rots and alien kol yimehem. So that all fits with this point that Avraham was given that ability, that Avraham was given that ability to do that. Ion Yaakov points out another point as well, why we're mentioning the eyes, the ears, and the bris milah, is because we know Rashi mentions on the pasuk, before he had his bris milah, he couldn't experience nevuah from Hashem standing; he would fall down. So therefore, like, he couldn't see clearly, he couldn't hear clearly. So now, as a result of the bris milah, now he's able to see and now he's able to hear, and therefore that's also another meaning of that Hashem gave him control over those parts of his body. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Ugrola. Your Gimel Shvat. So we have the Torah Chadoshim Iti Teitzei, the famous idea that there's going to be a new Torah that comes out from Hashem. Interesting, by the way, you know, we always think of that as that's how the actual pasuk goes. It doesn't. The actual pasuk goes Torah Iti Teitzei. The fact that it's Torah Chadosh actually comes from a medrash in Vayikra Rabbah. Anyway, so what does this mean, Torah Chadoshim Iti Teitzei? Torah is really on a level that only because Hashem himself brings it down to us are we able to reveal it. It wouldn't be able to be revealed by a person himself. But the point is that it will come down here. It'll be able to be comprehended and understood by a person's seichel. So in other words, what does this mean? Mashiach is going to have this Torah Chadasha at a level of nevuah. But now it's not just going to be nevuah, some abstract thing that you can't understand with seichel, and it's just that's the way it is. It's going to be also melubish in chochmas basav adam, so that Mashiach will be able to teach everybody kol ha'am, as the Rambam says, to teach them, because they'll be chachamim gdolim, and they'll know hidden things and understand the knowledge of the Eibishter as much as a person is able to. So even these high things of Torah Chadasha will be able to be understood with a person's seichel. There is, by the way, one of the project Lechut Sichas for this week from Chelik Chavav talks about this point. This is it's a hadran on Rambam from the first time, or the first time when Limud Rambam was just starting in Tavshin Dalad Mem, and the Rebbe develops the idea over there that Yodim Dvorim Astrumim means we'll have the ability to fully understand Maisa Bereshis, and Yodim Das Bodim Kafikay Chodim means that we'll have a tremendous amount of ability to understand to understand Maisa Merkava, and therefore to understand more and more about the Eibishter. But still, there's a limitation. It's still the Eibishter is built by Baal Gvul, and we're Baal Gvul, so therefore only be Kafish Parach Adam and not more than that. But it'll still be much more of a greater Koyach than we have now. Okay. Continuing with halachas on Shabbos, we were talking about a case where a person is dangerously ill. We talked about if doctors say that he's dangerously ill, or if the doctors say that not, but the patient himself does. So now what happens that an expert doctor, Jew or Goy, or anybody else who's knowledgeable in these things, he might say, right now, this guy is not in danger yet, but if you don't do such and such a prophylactic measure, then he might get, then he's going to get sicker and he might come the day sakana. So then even if the patient himself says he doesn't need, then we still mechal Shabbos for him. If the doctor says, and likewise, if the doctor says, for example, if they don't give him such and such a cure, he's for sure going to die. And now, then what if the doctor says, we don't know. If you give him this cure, he might survive. But if he doesn't, if you don't, then he's definitely going to die. That's also valid reason to be Mechal Shabbos. You're going to say the doctor himself is saying it's only a might, but that's good enough reason, even on a suffix like that, to be Mechal Shabbos for his treatment.